this episode, Craig, Aaron, and I get into what we think are the most generation-defining and most influential games in the industry. We take turns just firing off games and just exploring just how impactful they are. Also, as a spoiler for the next episode, we're going to be getting into how the industry evolved throughout this generation. And this is right before these consoles are going to launch on the November 10th for the Xbox and November 12th for the PlayStation 5. Also, do not forget that we are having coverage for both those consoles. If you want to get your comments in and questions for us to answer, please do so at speedy@outlook.com or comment on our various social medias. Hello and welcome back to Speed KK. My name is Victor, and I will be your bobacious violinist. And joining me today is Craig Terry.
I'm Curvature.
Aaron Demo.
This isn't my job, but I'm here.
And today, we want to close out this gaming generation that's not over yet. You know, Sony and all of them are saying they're going to support their consoles for like the next 4 years or whatever, but I don't give a shit. It's over for me. It's all dead to me. When you put new consoles in my face, all I only care about is one thing, and that's the Xbox Velocity architecture. Like, I don't know. I just choose one of the random marketing words that they said to my face. But other than that, I think it is a decent opportunity. I know there's still games coming out. For each of us to go through what is our minds, the most favorite games we've had throughout the generation, the most industry-defining ones, and we're just gonna talk about it, because that's what we do here in this podcast. We talk to each other and we talk to you most of all, but in a closed space where it's pre-recorded, and the only way you can talk to me or anyone else is through words on the screen. So who wants to go first? Who wants to tell me and your fellow podcaster partners their most standout game of the generation?
I'll say one that we can all completely agree upon in every aspect.
We'll see about that. I'm highly critical. I was a game critic.
I already agree. I'm 100% in.
Yeah. And that would be Sea of Thieves. Yes. Fantastic game of the generation. Not like really anything we played before. Super addicting. Got me to buy the console for the generation that existed for. That got me to buy the Xbox, because holy crap, what a fantastic game. What a fun game. What a game that I can put hours into.
Yeah, I'm gonna echo that one. I think that's awesome. And Rare came out, you know, swinging. They hadn't made a game in so long, and they still got it. You know, they made this big open world pirate game where you can hang out with your friends and throw them in the brig. and just have a good time pulling ropes and singing, playing instruments, and you know, I agree. That was super fun, and it might make us buy a console again for the next generation.
Exactly.
I think when it comes to Rare's trajectory, like, of course, we all know him from the 64 era, and then for Xbox to just, you know, just slap their name around like it didn't fucking mean anything and make them do like Xbox avatar accessory and shit like that for a little while. I guess, to be fair, it was a part of their team doing that. But yeah, but like what Craig said, like, you know, it was absolutely explosive to see their unveil. I forgot which E3 it was. I was trying to remember which conference it was. But the point being is that, you know, you see people moving around. You see like an island setting, and all of a sudden, and then it's just like, oh, a pirate ship. What the fuck is this? It's Rare, motherfuckers. That's what it is. And I agree with just how seemingly, I guess on paper, see just the developer just come out from the grave and like, and still have it, to still know what it is to make a game that's fun first and foremost.
Yep.
Okay, I'll go next. This game was kind of the first game on the new consoles that really showed me that it's, you know, this is the next generation. Like, PS4 came out hitting with Killzone and Knack. Like, it showed a lot of the pretty particle effects and all those things. But I really didn't feel like we were in that next generation until this game. You know, I'm a huge Dark Souls, Demon Souls like fan. Like, I love those games. From Software is awesome. And then when they released Bloodborne, like, that was it for me. That was, I fell in love. The art direction, the setting, the faster paced combat, like the weapons, like all of it was just, it felt like a step in something different, especially for, you know, a series that had already built so many things and kind of made a genre of itself, and then kind of redefined that was just so eye-opening for me to be like, holy crap, this is it. Like, this is the start of the new generation. and I completely love it. And it's still one of my favorite games today.
Yeah, I know with my time interacting with what is now called, like, you know, the what, like the Souls likes or the Borns likes or whatever, Soul Borns, however people like to twist around those words, like, you know, I'm not good at those types of games, and I never really have been. There are times where I gave you know, Dark Souls and all that a good kicking the can around, but like when it came to Bloodborne, I can agree on the setting side. Like, you know, it was just a world that, you know, was to me. I know a lot of people disagree too. Just to explore in, like, I just felt like the older games was just. I just feel like the environment mattered a little bit less. They were fantastical and like highly fantasy places, but like for this place to be like to walk through a door and like and then get some context of just like what this environment is and like how just desolate it is, where like people are like hiding and they're scared and like they're just like, man, fuck up, why don't you go over there? And it's like, oh my god. And then like and then you just walk in a dark room and there's like a guy just sitting there. You just want to know like why the fuck is this guy in a wheelchair and a fucking minigun just sitting here and shit like that. I think it's great.
Yeah, I absolutely love Bloodborne. It was it wasn't the first game I played in the the Souls category, but I totally agree with you that it did kind of redefine the genre again, where you know, Demon's Souls kind of started their whole too hard to play kind of style. They slowly built on it, and when Bloodborne came out, they made it accessible for anyone, but still incredibly challenging. Still kept all of the difficulty, but gave it a touch that made it, you know, like more likable, something that anyone can pick up and play, even though they'll get their butts handed to them. It makes sense, and it works, and it has such a good feel to it. And I would absolutely agree that that redefined the genre that they defined originally, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, just to add one more thought, I do agree with that accessibility. Again, the guy who, you know, aren't good at those games at all, but like the other ones, it's like more technical. You got your spells, you got your different types of weapons and all that stuff, but like when you're starting out, what you have is like your attack, your heavy, maybe a weapon change, dodging and healing. And like that's how I got a decent amount in. But you know, if you want to master the game, there's plenty of a, you know, growing to do there. But yeah, I guess I'll go next. My list, I've kind of organized it for like my three most, like, there goes Victor again, not surprising. And then I think I have some two left fields for you guys, but anyways, we'd start with the one we just happened to discuss before, the Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. For those who know the earlier episodes of the Speedy podcast, we were covering the Switch launch, and me and Craig had a nice intimate conversation of my first time with a Zelda game. And you know, and I still remember this day, and I still kind of feel it. Obviously, I know Craig's points. You know, he helped diminish them, but one of my points was just like, I feel like I'm cheating. I feel like I don't know the evolution of the Zelda games, and that, like, you know, now I'm just playing this modern thing. And Craig was just like, no, this encapsulates like everything that Zelda meant. I was glad, like, you know, even for older fans, that's how it was. But from my perspective as a new fan, like, It was like everything and more. Like it had these new mechanics like climbing and all that stuff that really let you do and go where you want. And it's just kind of weird how like there are games that like challenge that market that say like, oh yeah, you can do, you know, whatever you want, but like it never touches what Breath of the Wild does. Like things like a GTA or like a Skyrim, you know, they have their structure, and in a way their mission structure sort of gets in the way. It's this big blimp that's on the middle or the side of your screen that tells you have to go this way, and there's like zero of that in Breath of the Wild, and you really feel like it is your adventure. And it just makes running into things, all these unique things that happen to you and the things you discover, feel so genuine. And I can't even imagine, like, it's even hard to imagine how Breath of the Wild 2, the game that made that, that, you know, that open-ended structure, to replicate it again. I don't think they could, but I'm excited to see what Breath of the Wild 2 does.
Yeah, the Zelda franchise never fails, except, you know, the CDI games, but... Breath of the Wild was just, you know, we all knew it was going to be great. Like the videos and everything that we saw were like, okay, this is going to be cool. This is going to be the most open Legend of Zelda since, you know, Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask and all that. But I was not prepared for how open it was. I was not prepared for how many little surprises, like you said, you know, just pulling your sword out in a thunderstorm and getting shocked by lightning and, you know, like all these different little things that just kept happening. And it's not things I would expect from a Zelda game. Like it just expanded upon everything that it had built before. Just like we were talking about with Bloodborne, where it redefines the genre it creates. And I think Breath of the Wild had something for literally everyone. And it's had the difficulty, it had the fun little things, you know. I think it's as close to as you can get to a perfect game.
I completely agree with that being a game of any generation, because that's a Switch game, period. Like when I think of the Switch, I think of Breath of the Wild, you know. Like I mean I didn't even play it, right? But like I know that when I think of the Switch, I think of Breath of the Wild, and vice versa. If I think of Breath of the Wild, I think of the Switch, you know. And the little I do know about it is, it is interesting, and it's incredibly enticing, because, you know, they took this series that has been, you know, loved by fans, love for the story, love for the gameplay, love for all of these things that get, you know, people invest in, and it took it and it made it its own world, where all the other games, you're playing this story, you're going through it, and it's fun and fantastic, and now it's a living, breathing world that you're a part of, that you actually get to explore, and to the extent where it's like, you know, like a lightning strike is so non-story based, it's just something that would happen. You know, like it really brought it to like a realistic place that's like, this is something that's real now. You know, and I absolutely love that when games do things like that.
Yeah, and it showed that Nintendo wasn't, you know, scared to try different things, like cooking and durability in your weapons. Like that was not something I would expect from a Legend of Zelda game. But not only did they add it, but they like it worked. It worked so well that, you know, it like we need it in the next game.
Especially when it comes to the durability, like it was such a big risk, because like in other, like let's just say like RPGs, just as name a genre, like, you know, there is like, you know, breaking stuff, you know, things becoming disenchanted or what have you, but they never like truly went away. I'm sure it has in some titles, but in like the bigger mainstream notable ones, like it's just weaker. But to just straight up destroy your weapons, the way you can like defend yourself, like surprisingly just opens you up instead of makes you frustrated. It's just like, oh shit, well what can I do now? Well, here's a stick. I'm just gonna beat him to death with a stick until I can get his axe off of him. It's like, that's so amazing. But to add just one more point is, it was one of those games, again, because of how just open-ended and just like how freeing it is to have these, like, that's the best part too. They're not even like events, the things like you run into. They're just like, they're just happenstance. Like, it's just like, we designed this to like have a, you know, kind of like a pathway. And if you happen to be in that pathway, like whatever. But what I'm talking about is like the first time you see one of those dragons flying about, like, it's so silly to say now, but like then I genuinely thought, like, I was like the first person to encounter that. And I don't mean that in terms of just like, oh, I'm the first player in the world to see this. I'm just amazed it gave me that feeling that this was like my adventure and this is like some crazy thing that's just happening to me. I digress.
Very right on. Keeping in with the Switch theme, a next game for something that helped really define a generation, which is a little bit odd, and you guys may not have thought of this, but it's going to make a lot of sense. Bayonetta 2. That, ooh, for me, on the Switch, coming out exclusively on the Switch, like, that for me, I was not expecting when that got announced and released, but when I bought it and played it, holy crap, I had so much fun. It took everything I liked in the first game, kept it, added a little bit more excitement, a little bit more interest, and it just blew me away with what it was. And I was like, I was so happy that for that to be a Switch exclusive, that's impressive. That would be a game that I would buy a console for. I would buy the Switch just to play Bayonetta 2, and it was so fantastic. It was so fun to play.
I completely agree with you there. I really like the partnership between Nintendo and Platinum that I was not expecting. You know, it just doesn't seem like a exclusive type game that would come out. And we've seen it continue with Astral Chain, which is a fantastic game I just started playing, which falls in line with the kind of Bayonetta combat and, you know, the like full out there Platinum games that we love.
Right.
I completely agree that was just such a home run for Nintendo to get that exclusive. I know a lot of people who are like, you know, we wanted that game on other consoles. It's like, well, get a Switch.
Yeah.
And I haven't played this game. I played a little bit of the first one on PS3, which, you know, was the worst port of it. Super long load times and a weaker texture, I believe. But what I am really impressed about is that, you know, that it would be like on a Switch at all, because like, you know, we've known Nintendo, especially from the Wii U era, to just sort of like a little bit shy away from like just out there violent. I know it's not like super bloody, or it kind of is.
Oh, it's pretty, yeah.
Like it's pretty out there. I know there was like a Mad World or whatever on the Wii and stuff like that, but like Nintendo mostly shied away from that kind of stuff, and they definitely shied away from like the hardcore. They try to get it back with the Wii U and stuff like that. So to not only have like this like just very Japanese, like pretty sexualized, pretty violent, and like a just fantastically like weird concept, not only be on the Switch, but to being exclusive, and one that like Nintendo puts their foot forward with it when it comes to marketing, being like, yes, this is on the Switch and we're fucking damn proud of it. So
yeah, that's true.
Cool. So the next one needs no introduction because it's a game that should be on everyone's list. Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. Which was fantastic. It was just so there's not many games that have so much lore and have so much story packed into, you know, we've had big worlds, you know, free roaming and those kind of things, but for Witcher 3 it, you know, really roped you in. Even the side missions were fun, like you wanted to explore every inch of the world. It has everything that we said for Breath of the Wild, I would say almost for Witcher 2. Just it's full of surprises, it's full of very rich story, it's full of just every part of it is so put together, like with craft, with style. Like I love The Witcher 3, and it's the way it wraps up the story is just probably the best ending I've ever seen to a game too. It had meaty DLCs, it had, you know, a lot of people don't like the combat, which I totally understand. The combat was probably, you know, the worst part of it, but as for it ruined other RPGs for me, that's how good that game was. I was playing Fallout 4 and I stopped to play Witcher 3, and after beating Witcher 3 I tried to go back and I'm like, I can't do it. Like I can't go back to something that was so well put together and then, you know, do something else, because it's just that good. And that's what I want for next generation. I want something that'll rope me into the world, make me care about the lore and the characters, and really engulf me in like full fantasy.
To be fair, Fallout 4 didn't live up to 3 in New Vegas anyway, so
that was just one of them.
But yeah, another game I didn't have a lot of experience in. You know, I played like what could be like the first hour or so of the game, but from what I do understand is it just what CD Projekt Red has done is that they proved that for a game doesn't have to be like, you know, this, I don't know, like Naughty Dog, like very meticulously singular story that's like crafted at every detail because it's the only thing that they have to like focus on. You know, The Witcher 3 has so many storylines and like side missions and stuff like that, and they don't like skimp on the details on most of them, if not all of them. Like every mission there's a point to it, and like and you feel like you accomplish things story-wise and stuff like that. And I would be like smiling, be like, yeah, dude, whenever people tell me about like the missions they've done in Witcher 3, and you know, and they give me mad FOMO, I will say. And now that I know that has a good ending, like, you know, there are a lot of good games that just sort of just it ends, but a good satisfying ending, like, sign me up. I think give me that PS5 upgrade stuff with the ray tracing and I'm in.
Yeah, I remember hearing about The Witcher 3 for months. It was just always, you want to see what next gen is, it's the fucking Witcher 3. Look at how this runs, look at how this plays. It was always like, just like for months, it was just Witcher 3, Witcher 3, Witcher 3. Like that definitely has to be one of the top things I think of when I think of this entire PS4, Xbox generation. Like that was the game for so long. And what I thought it did so fantastic was, like Craig was saying about like comparing it with other like RPG games, is on paper, nothing's different. Still have side stories, still have the same kind of idea. But with games like Fallout or Skyrim or whatever have you, those feel like games where you're going and doing missions, and while you're on that quest, you're playing a story, but when you're not, you're disconnected. You're just running around in a game, you go to the next story. But what The Witcher 3 did was make it feel like you're playing a single story. that every side mission you did, every side little thing, every cart you ran off the side of the road to go fight some random thing, every time you did that, it felt like that was part of the story that is being told. Didn't ever feel like I'm just playing a game. You felt like this is the story. Every little tiny stupid mission was part of the tales being told for this character. You know, it's equivalent to watching the Netflix series. Like every single little side thing was a part of the story. It didn't feel disconnected. And that's what made it such a fantastic game that I would agree kind of ruins other RPGs. That's why I put it off for so long, because when you play it, it's like, this is what it should feel like. I am Geralt. I am going through here. This is what a game should feel like when it's telling a story. I have the freedom to do what I want, but I don't feel like it's just something to do. You know, like this is who I am. This is my story. And this is how I'm going to tell it.
Totally.
I wouldn't define finding someone's goat as stupid, but you know. all right. So for my game, it's going to be the new God of War. The thing that was thought of to be like a reboot, but actually ties together with the old games. But the point is I'm pretty sure I talked about it with you guys before. I don't know if I ever said it on recorded audio, but the reason why I love God of War so much is it's just like it's very like force feedback, like very tactile combat, and you know, like for me, that was like kind of like that was the game. You know, people probably have like mixed feelings about the RPG elements, the equipments and stuff like that. But that stuff was like good to me. But even then, like if I swiped all that stuff away, like just fighting people and getting more stronger and like getting like new move sets and all that stuff, like it was like so crisp and like so like I can only really define it to me as like really classical. Like I told you guys, like it brought me right back to my PS2 days where I was, you know, playing those God of Wars. I was playing like Okami. I was playing Resident Evil 4 and all that stuff. Like it's just a game that's just being a game. And like, and then even past that, the cherry on top is like, you know, it's an actual story that stars Kratos. Like you don't think of Kratos as a story or a character that develops and evolves, but like,
yeah,
it's to me, it was like massive. And I don't know what to say. I'll say about it other than the little twist, like a little bit in the middle of the game, you know, made it even more so, because you know you can play Kratos the way you've been used to him, is the way I'll put it.
This was also on my list, and I almost didn't put it on there because I knew God of War was going to be on Victor's list, but I still needed to, just because that's how much it impacted me. I was not a huge fan of the first God of War games, you know, on PS2, just because like everybody was talking about it, and I was more into like Ratchet and Clank and Sly Cooper, and like I got why it was good, but you know, it was too macho, kill everybody, like sleep with women, you know, like I couldn't play it in front of my little brother because there was boobs everywhere, you know, there was like I couldn't connect with Kratos as a character, and like to me that was really important. So I wasn't too into, you know, like the reboot looked cool, but I didn't know what it was going to do for me, just because I wasn't coming from like loving this franchise so much. And then it 1000% won me over when I started playing. It just, the open-endedness, the combat that was so fluid, I didn't expect it. And it made me feel powerful. You know, it made it feel like you carried weight and, you know, you are the God of War. Like it, the way it played out was just so fantastic and so out of left field, at least for me. I completely loved the RPG elements. The whole world is full of lore and the characters. It was just like a whole nother level, because you know, you got both of them, basically. You got the fine-tuning beautifulness of an Uncharted game, and then you got the lore and heavy story from Witcher 3, and like mashed them all together, and it just created this game of the generation, I might even call it, just because it was so perfect. It was so perfect, and I can't believe how much I loved it and how much I'm excited for Ragnarok. And I 100% agree that is probably my game of the generation, which I would not have expected.
Yeah, what I absolutely loved about it so much is because I played all of the God of Wars growing up, not necessarily because I wanted to, but because my friends had it and they wouldn't stop talking. So I was like, fine, I'll play it, you know? So what really like settled in how great that game was, is we've been talking about how certain games have been redefining their, you know, like a whole style of game. Well, this God of War redefined its series in the exact same way that it did when it came out. Where the original series, like how all that played out, was it was meant to make you feel like you're this badass beating these gigantic titans and gods and all this crazy shit. And it was meant to make you feel powerful and make you feel like a badass, which it did in a sense for that era. But when they remade it and like made it like this with the RPG elements, completely redid how the art style is and everything, they settled in to make you not just feel like you're powerful, but they made it an epic, like a classic telling of this warrior's journey, you know? And like they really sold this character to be a god of war, not just some overpowered dude cutting people up. This is who he is. This is, you know, a father. This is all of these things that are just like intense and connective. And it like, it just brought all of the things that they originally tried to do and just gave it a little bit more oomph and made it just epic, you know? Like it's telling this huge story that you can comprehend, you're a part of. It's not just there's some giant guys that you beat down, you know, like that's cool. But when they give it a story and give it, why are you doing that and how it's going to play out and all the weapons and bringing in new mythology and making this giant creative world, you know, like that changes everything, you know?
Yep. Nice.
So next one on my list, we already talked a little bit about this idea, but Dark Souls 3 for me is that introduced me to Dark Souls. And after playing every other Dark Souls game, I can still say that is absolutely my favorite. They peaked out when they made that game. That is the pinnacle for me because it came out after Bloodborne and they took some of the elements that made Bloodborne more fun than the Dark Souls series and put it in there. So it felt a little bit more fluid. It felt a little bit more fast-paced, but you still got the magic and wonder of this, you know, crazy realm, which is the only real reason I would put it ahead of Bloodborne, is I prefer fantasy magic worlds to like a dystopian 1800s medieval vibe. That's pretty much the only reason, but I love the lore. I loved how it played. It was gorgeous. You know, it was fun to play with friends. It was difficult, but never made you feel like, whenever you won or were defeated, you didn't really feel cheated. You felt like, oh, that's where my mistake was. That's where I need to redo it. And the DLC that came after was massive and expansive, and I played it for so long. And the biggest thing that I would say that would attribute to how great of a game it is since my first PS4 and then my PS4 Pro, it's always been downloaded on my console. Not once did I ever delete that game. No matter what I had, no matter how much space I had left, I never deleted Dark Souls 3.
I love Dark Souls 3. I do. I think they perfected the Dark Souls formula, like you said. You know, it was the last game of the Dark Souls series, and they went out on top. And you know, bigger bosses and all those things. And like you talked about, you know, with Dark Souls, it doesn't get easier as you go; you get better. And it really felt like that. And the multiplayer aspects were fine tuned, and you know, everything was perfect in that formula. So I love it too.
This is the first one where I generally don't have much to say. But you know, obviously I played it with you guys, and you know, I'm never gonna say that like I don't understand the appeal. Like you guys know me personally, there's some playing up I do where I'm just like, this game makes me angry and all that stuff. What does make me genuinely angry though is just the idea that me and my friends are just trying to play this game, and there's like interrupters, which is, you know, part of the fun, that just like, to me, it's just ruining it. I'm just like, I'm just trying to hang out with my friends. Why is someone killing me? But to hear like, but when we're playing together, to hear you guys like geek out about it and like have like a genuine happiness to be like, I can't believe this type of game has multiplayer and stuff like that. Like, you know, I really feel it from you guys. And yeah, that's what I'm impressed about.
Awesome. Yeah. Since Victor stole God of War from me, I'll talk about my game of the year 2019, which was Outer Wilds, which is the Outer Worlds. It's Outer Wild, and it was fantastic. I love space games. You know, Mass Effect is one of my favorite series. Like anything with space, is like, that's all me. And this is a game I didn't know anything about. I was dog sitting for one of my friends, and I was on my Xbox. I took it there, and I was playing Game Pass, and I saw, you know, a space game on Game Pass, and I was like, I'll check it out. And it I completely got absorbed in it, and I could not stop playing it. Outer Wilds, you know, it's your first day as an astronaut. I'll try not to, you know, spoil too much, but it's your first day as an astronaut. You go into space and you have a great time, and then 22 minutes later, supernova, and the whole universe explodes. The end, and the game's over. And then you wake up. You wake up 22 minutes in the past, and you look in the sky, and like you're like, holy crap, this already happened. So you're stuck in a time loop. So you got 22 minutes to travel across the universe, check out planets, learn these clues from an ancient species that left, like, they wrote all over, but they're nowhere to be found. So you're like, you know, where'd the species go, and why is a supernova happening, and why am I in a time loop, and can it be stopped? And it's just such an amazing story wrapped up in every world is different, and they each change as time goes. So every time you play is different. Luckily, you do keep like clues as you die. There's a screen in your spaceship that tells you like the clues you've found. So you're flying to each planet and you're like, what can I find here and what can I do here? And then it's like, okay, the supernova is going to happen in 2 minutes. Like, I can hear the music changing. How does this world change now? Like, what's going on here? And it just gave me this sense of wonder I hadn't felt in a video game, I don't know if ever. And there was some worlds that were just like strange and exciting and scary. Like, you know, you go to a world full of tornadoes and you're like, you know, it feels like you're about to die. And you die in stupid ways and you have a great time with it. I walked out of my spaceship without putting my helmet on like six times. And I'm like, God, I should know this by now. I've died so many times. And it's just little moments like that where there's not combat. There's not like, I'm not, you know, fighting aliens. I'm trying to stop the supernova, or, you know, figure out what the hell's going on. And it's just amazing. It was amazing for me. And you know, this isn't a AAA game. Like, this is a small studio that came out with this game, and it just was, it's fantastic. And I don't know if I'll ever have that experience with a video game again, because like, it was just that sense of wonder that I love this game. I think everyone should play it.
Yeah, I remember you first playing it, and you were just like, dude, Game Pass, Outer Wilds, you're playing it. Like, end of story. I'm like, okay, I'll just hop on and get it. And talking about stupid deaths, I'm pretty sure right in the beginning, like, you have to go up like a ramp to go talk to someone near a rocket, and I jumped off it and died. So I died within like a minute of playing, and then it was like time loop, and I'm like, what? And then I remember I was telling you, I was like, I died, and you're like, it's crazy what happens, right? And I'm like, crazy. And then after that first death, I got to the part and I'm like, oh shit, this is okay. So it's not just when you die and you're not supposed to die. It's like, you're supposed to die and figure these things out. And just like what you said, like, that game really does give you a sense of wonder. I don't think I've ever played a game that really makes me be in awe of all of the things happening. And my favorite part about it is it's kind of campy. You know, it's kind of like funny mm-hmm. and quirky, and the characters are a little bit weird, and you're just like, this is kind of like silly and goofy, but I feel like it's important still. You know, I feel like it has importance and weights to everything I do, but it's lighthearted and fun, and it doesn't punish you for anything. It's just kind of like, oh shit, time to figure all this stuff out. And it was such a wondrous game, like, it really full of wonder. I couldn't agree more.
So I take it back. This game I have even less to say. But I've only really seen promotional art of it. I have not seen a video, so I'm pretty excited from what you're telling me.
That's the way to play.
Go into it blind. And just one more thing I'll say is that, like, any game, doesn't matter if it's good, bad, big budget, small indie developer, any game that makes you go, is that supposed to happen? Is a good game. But,
yeah.
But anyways, so my game, you guys may or may not have seen coming a mile away, but we'll see, is Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Okay.
And so the reason why I picked this game as like my like genre defining thing is not necessarily because like the way it plays, because like it plays pretty well. Like, it, like, people arguably say like, oh, this is so much more funner than like, you know, Final Fantasy 15 or something like that. you know, and you know, the way story and cutscenes like play out, it's like, it's almost like any typical modern JRPG. So it's just like, so like, what's so fantastical about Final Fantasy? And I think it's like, it's mostly its context and the way it just kind of like, you know, takes players' expectations and like goes somewhere else with it. Because like for the contextual part, it's just like, it's like, God, ever since like, what was it? It was like 1994, 1997. I forget when that game was released. I wasn't there when it was released, but yeah. And, just like pretty much ever since then, like ever since people play, it's a lot of people's Final Fantasies. So like, you know, it just grew that base and made JRPGs mainstream. But, yeah, they just wanted it again. Like, it's like, I want it in fucking PS2 graphics. I want PS3 graphics. We got that PS3 technical demo, which really fueled the flames. And it was just like, it almost never felt like we were ever going to get this game. Especially like I said in the last podcast, there was even a time where screenings was just like, you're not going to get the game. Not until like, you know, like until we grow as a company. And will you ever fucking get that game? And everyone's like, no, please. And then from when they announced it, like we all collectively had like a like big excitement, like throwing up our arms and like sighs of reliefs. And then we all just immediately knew like this game cannot live to the hype. It will never survive it. Like no matter what they do, like it can be like dialogue to dialogue, scene to scene, pixel to pixel, like the perfect game. But there will always be one fucking nerd out there who's just like, but what about when Tifa says this? And it's just like, it won't do it. So what does Square Enix do instead? Obviously I won't spoil anything, but like there's elements in the story and the way that especially the ending plays out, or it's just like, what the fuck are you doing? What is this? And like, and the whole time I was playing that ending, I was like mad. I was frustrated. I was just like, this, none of this makes sense. Like, you, like I'm like, you can ask Nicole. I was just like, I'm like standing up being just like, why are they doing this when like, we've seen this before, but they're doing it now. Like, do you have to be a fan of Final Fantasy VII to get this? Or is this like just for the slubs who just walks in and be like, ooh, a new Final Fantasy, what's this all about? And then the game is over and I beat that first part because it's going to be multiple parts. And then the things I read afterwards, I was just like, it just clicked for me. I was like, this is the smartest shit I have ever fucking read in my entire life. I hope this happens. And all the, you know, clues are pointing to like, this is what's going to happen. And I'm just like, wow, like these parts need to come out fast, not just for the sake of, you know, us being impatient, but, you know, just to see how it plays out. And thanks to the way this is going out, hopefully it's in as few parts as possible and comes out quickly. So yeah,
I've been excited for that game for so long, because that's like the Final Fantasy game, you know, like you're saying, like that's the one that started me on the path of, oh, there's other games than like Spyro and Crash, you know, like just like the normal typical game set for like a kid. And I was just like, I've never heard of a JRPG until that game, and it just blew me away. So of course having the remake come out was just exciting. And I think they did such a great job combining like the two elements and the two gaming styles that people are interested in Final Fantasy, which is, I want to play it because it's a fun game to play. I want to play it because I'm a fan of Final Fantasy VII. So like you're saying, that they kind of altered some of these story elements to not be an exact one-for-one remaster. It's kind of like they took the idea of Final Fantasy VII and went, what would we do now? You know, like right now, how would we make this game? And gave it this like streamlined, good feel that anyone who's played it before would love it and notice all of these little interesting different things and go, oh, maybe these are all connected, and get their mind blown by the end and go, wait a second, hold on, right? And then if you had no idea about it, you would just be playing a really fun, cool game that looks a lot like the story that everyone fell in love with. So I would totally agree that that's one of those games that's like, I'm so happy that that exists. I'm so excited, so glad that I get to be in a place where I can play that kind of thing.
Yes. I, like I said, I love Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy 15, I'll defend to my death. I loved. And, you know, Final Fantasy VII is one of those big games. It's been a big part of our life, you know. Although, like, it also gives me hope that someday we'll get a Chrono Trigger remake, you know. but it was just so cool to see that this actually came out. And, you know, from the time it was announced to the time it came out, like, the hype that was building you were talking about and how is this even going to happen. And for it to deliver, that was just amazing to me. I haven't beaten it. I've only played the demo. But those new elements that you talk about actually get me more excited for it. I'm excited to see this, you know, whatever this turns into, whatever this evolves into. That's really exciting for me. And I'm glad that it's kind of opening up the door for people to, you know, get back into JRPGs and back into Final Fantasy VII, because it's that big a name, Final Fantasy VII.
So talking about a little bit on the same track of not necessarily remakes, but old games that we fucking love. Gotta be either the top or damn near the top for me. Something that I've played 3 different games of the previous series. I wanted to get into it, never could, but they just nailed it so fantastic. Awesome. Monster Hunter World.
Oh.
Monster Hunter World just solidified it. That introduced Monster Hunter to so many people, millions of people that never even heard of it. It completely just blew people away. I mean, Capcom did like the most amazing job making that game. It's exactly what I would want in a Monster Hunter game. You got this sense of, you know, wonder and this world that you're exploring in multiple places and just hunting these giant things and being mad at how stupid they are. And the coolest thing about that one is in the previous series, when you went on a hunt, it was very close to being the same. They usually went to the same place. They had the same animations, the same attack, same everything. But in World, they made it really feel like you went on a hunt. Every single time, every 150 fucking times that you fought a Diablos, it was a different fight every time. Every time you were on the edge, wondering if you were going to survive, wondering if, you know, is he going to do this move? Am I going to get backed in the corner? What do I need? What kind of weapons? Like, it always was different. And that was so next gen for me. That was so, this is beyond the gaming scope I'm used to. And then above all of that, the support that they had in that game just is mind-blowing. Things that I don't think have ever happened in any other game. You have free monsters coming out, free DLC, constantly giving you new weapons, constantly giving you new armor, new characters, festivals, all of these things that are communicative and wonderful, and then coming out with DLC that you finally get to pay for, and it's basically an entirely new game. I mean, they nailed what a video game should be and how it should relate to the community by a wide margin. That right there shows me what next generation looked like when that came out. That absolutely defined a huge part of my PS4 generation.
Yes, 1,000. You know, I love Monster Hunter World. For Monster Hunter has always been that series that I always wanted to get into. You know, I had the PSP games, I had, you know, the 3DS game, like, but it always seemed like it was so hard to get into. You know, I was drawn away from the lack of story and the way that the levels were sectioned off, and yeah, the monster would run away and you chase it and it'd load, and it just seemed like a really long process for not much payoff. And Monster Hunter World just took, you know, what was already established and then made it so everyone could enjoy it. And it did. It made it into a living world, and you saw these huge monsters and the way that they moved so naturally, and just filling that into a console space where multiplayer, you know, is easier to do, and it made it accessible. It made it fun. It made it awe. Like, I was so just in awe of that game when it came out. And you're right. The fact that they continually update it and have events and have all these things for free, Capcom is just blowing it out of the water, like, over and over again.
Yeah, so it's like setting a new standard, but since it's so high, we know no one else can meet it. You know, like, this is what I want games to be like, but I know no one's going to do that. It's just nice to see it existed once.
Yeah, I do agree with you there, Craig, on that last part, where it's just like, especially listening to the way you ran about it, about Capcom's trajectory, where it's just like you just had your head held down low and you're just like, oh my god. But then they came out of nowhere and they started making good Resident Evils again. They made Dead Rising. I don't know how they turned out, but they made them like wacky and like kind of cool again and all this stuff. And then they just took Monster Hunter, which as you guys were mentioning, is just like, you know, just sort of like a bit slower, arcadier, like, you know, and like and whatnot. I lost my train of thought for a second, but my point being is that like when I came in, like the accessibility was there, because like when I play the older ones, like I did not get the combat like at all. Like there are times where I'm just like, I was like, why am I so static when I attack? Why does this happen? Why like I don't even know how to even get to my traps menu to even like, you know, do that stuff. But playing World with you guys, like especially when you guys were there holding my hand and stuff, telling me how stuff worked, like I was just playing it being like, this is a completely different game. And you know, it even looks different, but the nice part is the cherry on top is that like it kept, from what I remember from playing the little games for a little bit, it still kept those staples. Like there's like just like, I guess in a way, iconography, but they did it with their animations where it's just like, oh, this is like this is Monster Hunter through and through. Like it's still recognizable, and I always liked it for that.
Yeah, I was so impressed when they took that series that had so much potential, and they took all this really technical kind of excluding gameplay, you know, like how you play that game, it kind of excluded a lot of people, you know, like you had to know what you were doing, you kind of like had to invest in it, and they made something technical into something so fluid and natural that you could pick up a controller and you can win. You would know what to do innately, you know, it felt right, you know, and you can still get technical, master combos, master all of these different traps and environmental things, but didn't have to have a good time.
Cool. Love that. All right, so this will be my last one since, you know.
It's the last one.
Since it's the last one.
Since I'm a big old thief.
Yeah. It's funny, too.
So this is all, I saved this one for last because it's probably the last one that's going to have this much impact on me until the next generation. And it's recent and I won't shut up about it, but this game made me fall back in love with turn-based games. It made me fall back in love with long games. And that's Persona 5 Royal. And there's so much I could say about this game, and I talk about it constantly. Anyone who will listen, I'm like, go play it. But when I say it, you know, I didn't think I could get back into a turn-based game. You know, for a long time, it didn't click with me. It felt too slow. Like, I tried Dragon Quest. I tried all these other games. And I didn't think, like, that was a genre I could be back into. And same with the Persona series. I've always been, like, intimidated. You know, these are 100-hour games. And I think of my time as very valuable because I do so many things. And I'm like, I can't get into a game that's going to take 100 hours to beat when I could play a bunch of other games. And it got me to a point where I like looked up the number of hours in a game before I played them. And, you know, and I gamefied Persona 5 a few years ago when Persona 5 came out. And I played the first hour and I'm like, you know, this is really cool, but I can't dedicate my life to it. And I didn't think like I ever would. So once quarantine started, I started collecting steel books, like special editions. And, you know, I was doing that. And Persona 5 Royal had just come out and they had a steelbook edition and it was on sale. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, fuck it. I'm just going to try it. And if I do this, I'm going to actually play it. I'm so glad I did, because I instantly fell in love with this game, with this whole series. I the overall themes, it's like a basic friendship simulator. You know, you hang out with your friends, you go fight in these palaces, and you're trying to change people's cognition to make them, you know, you find these awful, awful people and you make them confess their own sins with their own mouth. And, you know, you're traveling through, like, it's dungeon crawling, but they're crafted so well and it's so fun. It's like playing your favorite anime. And never did I think, like, I was waiting. I was like, when is this game going to become boring for me? Like, how many hours into this game am I going to be tired of it? And I wish it was longer. I want it to never end. Like, I was surprised. I was laughing. I was crying. Like, that game surprised me every single hour. and I completely love it. Just the combat, like, it's over stylized, it's fast, it's fun, it just works so fluidly. You know, the collecting personas, fusing them, getting new personas, it had this addiction around like Pokemon almost. And just the interactions with characters, you know, I loved every character, and I wanted to, you know, like, fight all every guy, every person that we went into their mind and trying to, you know, change their heart and all those things. Like, I cared about the Phantom Thieves, and I wanted to see where the story was going to go. Like, like I said, it's like playing your favorite anime, and I wanted it to never end. I think that's all I can say. And it was so good that after I played it for 140 hours and it was all over, luckily Persona 4 Golden just released on Steam. So I went and played that for 90 hours. And now I'm in the middle of playing Persona 3. And it's just like, I don't know if I've ever played played a game that made me like, it loved the entire series like so fast. It was like overnight where I was like, oh my God, this is like, I completely fell in love with it. And I think everyone should play. If you're a fan of RPGs, if you're a fan of anime, fan of any of the things, check it out.
Nice. I'm definitely in that lull that you had before, where there'd be times where I have like this existential crisis when it came to JRPGs, because, you know, I grew up with them a little bit, like, you know, like, obviously I had Final Fantasy 7, but like, I love 8, 9, 10, 10-2. Yes, I played 10-2, and some of my other favorites, like Legend of Legaia, Legend of Dragoon, I played a little bit of those ones, so like, I have like great nostalgia for those, I honestly couldn't tell you the last one. Like, I played in like in modern times. Like, I purchased what was it? Age of Zodiac. Which one fantasy is that? 13? 12? 12. 12 Age of Zodiac. I bought it, and like, I know how the game, I played it before, I beat it, and I can't even like bring myself to do that. Like I'm just starting to just really dig in the back of my head, and I'm like, do I even like these games anymore? But when it comes to Persona, like, there's, even from like, from a face value like perspective, like, you can't deny like the art style. And again, if you like anime, like, you know, like, it kind of hits on those. I played a little bit of I will say that, like, when I went to AX in LA, the Anime Expo, like, something came over me. Like, we went over to the Atlas booth, and you know, I was just talking to the guy who was running the merch store, and in the middle of talking, and I actually interrupted him while he was talking to me, because I'm just so rude, and I was just like, you know what, can I get a Persona 5? He's like, yeah, sure, here you go. And I was like, you know what, give me Golden for the Vita, and give me that PS2 game. I don't even have a PS2 right now, but I'll take that. And like, because I was just so desperately trying to get that back, where I was like, I need to play JRPG again. And I heard just Persona is just like, it's the bee's knees and stuff. And, you know, I sadly, they, you know, they're in drawers, but your stories of Royal really opened my heart, is what I'm trying to say.
I think, yeah, and I think somebody trying to get into the series, I think Persona 5 Royal is the perfect place to do that.
Yeah, I played, I think, Persona 3 when it came out, like, on accident. I think I like bought it thinking it was something else, and I started it, and I was like, and that was in the era where, you know, but my favorite game was like Call of Duty or something, you know, like totally not JRPG, you know, totally not that kind of story based, you know, you decide what goes on and turn based action. Like, I remember playing a little bit and going, this is a game I don't ever want to play, you know, like, this is not fun, this is boring, right? And then I remember you telling me about playing Persona 5, and I was like, oh, I think I have a memory of that's not a good kind of game. But yeah, like, I looked into it and looked around it, and I realized, like, that you're right, like, that is kind of like playing your own anime. And hearing you talk about falling in love with characters and being invested, like, that's what I look for. That's the kind of games that I am attracted to. I want something that I can look at a character and I can go, I want to know everything about you because I want to relate to you as a character, you know? And like, that, mm-hmm. That's such an exciting thing and an exciting concept. And for that game to be so massive with all of these things to do is amazing on its own. But the most impressive thing is to convert you into playing it for an entire series. I would totally agree that that's something that defines how fantastic a game is when it goes, you played one of them, now you're going to play all of them because of how much that felt good. Like that just blows me away.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And when I think of this series, like, I know how much you would like it personally. Like, I just don't. And
I'm currently have it on my screen right now on do I want to buy it or not?
Well, I need it digital now since I'm getting a PS5, so I might slip you $20.
Hey.
And I know when Persona 6 comes out, I'm going to, you know, get like 3 days off work and just...
I'm going to get 3 copies.
And hand it to my friends, like, please play these. When our friend moved away recently, I was like, here, play this game. You're going away gift. I gave him a copy Royal just because I like it so much. I think everyone should play it.
That's very cool.
So this one's a little bit cheating because it's not a full-fledged game. And you probably know what I'm talking about just by that hint alone. But it was meant to be, and we're all excited about it. Hideo Kojima told us that he meant to make us shit our pants with it. And that's going to be the PT playable teaser demo that was meant to be Silent Hills, as it turned out. And the reason why I feel like this defines a genre is because just a generation, thank you, is just like the hoax and the murmurs and the collaboration that came from this game, like from the moment that it was like unveiled at Sony's press conference, or like as like the trailer's playing and as it like vaguely gives you like a fake developer and it's just called PT and like very vague scenes, and like people were like immediately looking at that being like, what the fuck, what did that even say, what it was like, who's that developer, who's like all this stuff, and like I'm like, oh, you can play right now. And like, and then even though that conference was just like just full of like, you know, heavy hitter titles, everyone just immediately downloaded it and was just like, what the I'm like, I have goosebumps. What the hell is this? And, you know, maybe I'm slightly biased only because of the amazing night we all had when we tried that game. Like not only then, but twice. Like, you know, we played it in Craig's room and we were just like, dude, like I don't get it, whatever. And then like, and then we went to Aaron's room because I think we're showing another friend, maybe Sunny, and like we played it then and two times, and just, it's just maddening and like just so creepy and just scary and just like, and then even once you get past the initial like puzzle, we didn't even realize we're playing a puzzle game because after a while we're in the first like, you know, 30 minutes or so, we're just like, we just have to like pass through the door a few times, and then when you realize passing the door doesn't do anything anymore, that's when like, that's when you're going online, you're checking your phone, you're seeing what people are saying, and it got beyond the point where like we weren't checking like IGN articles anymore, we were checking like Reddit or something, and like what other players are saying, and it's just crazy. But like, and for me personally, what makes this game just so like frozen in time for me in a good way is that no matter how many times I turn that game on, which unfortunately I cannot do anymore, that was on my brother's PlayStation. Every time I turn that game on, it is still frightening. Like her freaking weird gurgling, her weird like fucking horrid breathing and stuff like that, like it still gets me. And even when I play like half-assed version of it, because there's so many fan remakes, people still believe in this game, that they're just willing, there's even a guy who had like zero coding experiences being like, screw it, I'm gonna make it an Unreal, and like for his first like fan remake it was like pretty good. And there's another one that was like a near perfect recreation, and I played that one. It's the closest we can get to it, unfortunately, for those who don't have it downloaded still. It's still there. It's still creepy. It, like even in its most faux form, like not even complete, this isn't my final form. But it's still got it. It's still there. And that just goes to show that Hideo Kojima and that team, like they're just onto something that was so genuinely scary that we haven't seen from horror games since. Like there's now decent like scary games now, but oof. And that was just demo. Like there are full games where I get through it and I'm just like, that one part was scary.
Yeah, that's what I would say, is that like that was the first game that I was genuinely afraid to play. that, like, I didn't want to turn on because of how fucking scary it was. Like, that might be the first time that something like that's ever happened. And for it to be basically a playable trailer, like, it wasn't even like a game. And for it to just be like something that someone came up with and did, like, that it's that recognizable. I mean, people know what PT is, and the fact that it can't be played anymore just added to its infamy. You know, like, that's an iconic game. People playing it was like, have you heard of this? Have you played this? It was just astounding. Nothing was ever like that. And it just, I don't know. I totally agree that that could be something that's like, even though it's not a game, that's how iconic that was, is that even though it's not an actual game, it fits a game of a generation.
100% agree. And it paved the way for, you know, Hideo Kojima to leave Konami, and for Death Stranding to become a thing, and for all these things. But yeah, 100%, there's no other horror game that did what PT did. You know, we have an Amnesia, we have Outlast, we have scary games, but nothing is so horrific. You know, you can't even stay on the pause menu so long, or else
right,
his face will pop up. So good, like, you were never safe. You never really knew what was happening or what was going to happen. And it was true. It was an experience more than a game. It's like, yeah, you know, nightmare fuel, how scary this was. And everyone, like, after it was announced that PT was canceled and, you know, Silent Hills wasn't a thing anymore, like, people still talk about it. Like, maybe Hideo will make me a scary game next time. Maybe this and that. It's just amazing to me that, yeah, people are still talking about a teaser and how much of an impact that it made.
And, like, the craziest thing about that was, or about the game itself, was it's you start off already afraid because you don't know what's going to happen, right? And you hear these little things and you get a little bit freaked out. And every time you got comfortable, it got a little bit more terrifying. So, like, you were never in a sense of, I understand what I'm doing in this game. It was always on edge. And it's probably one of the few times I've ever played anything or watched anything or anything in the idea that it just kept building to scarier and scarier, and I was more terrified as I played. Nothing has ever done that before. If I watch a horror movie, play a horror game, I understand at some point what's happening, what to expect. I might get afraid of a jump scare, but I'm never just ominously afraid of what's happening. And that game did mm-hmm. it. And I haven't played anything like that since. You know, like, it yeah. really was unique, one of a kind.
For a little bit of, like, optimism for, because, you know, for a game that I feel like defines this generation, and people probably want to check it out, sadly the only way is fan remakes. But for one positive note, when it comes to the creator Hideo Kojima, he's been reading scary books, he's been watching scary movies, and I love how, when, like, he talks about it, how he tweets about it, he's like it's even hard for me to do research for this stuff because I'm easily scared. I'm like a big scaredy cat. And like, and that's like a good barometer for a guy that weird to be like, well, this scares me, so I know how to push it in a way that it can also be scared for people who might not be so easily scared, is how he, like, put it himself. So hopefully his next game's scary. He says it might not be, but hopefully it's scary. From what he's reading and tweeting about, like, it's a good chance.
So my last game, I wasn't super sure. It was right on the edge of this generation, like the beginning of it. But one game that absolutely is what I think about, that I've invested so many hours in, so much money in, played with my friends so many times, has got to be Destiny. Destiny is one of those games that we played the alpha, we played the beta, we played the game, we bought all the DLC, we played the next game, Destiny 2, we bought that DLC. We went through the list because that really, to me, playing that alpha was like, holy shit, this is what this generation is made to be. So soon too, like, that was only like a couple months or so in of the PlayStation being, or PS4 being released, and I remember playing it and going like, this is it, this is what next gen looks like, this is what next gen feels like. And it was an alpha. I remember even playing it with Craig and going, how the fuck is this an alpha? That it's so well done, it's so smooth, it's so, compared to everything on the PS3. And what made it so, like, next gen for me is when they released it for the PS3 and the PS4, if you played it on the PS3, you knew that the PS4 was miles better. Like, it showed how big of a difference those two consoles were. And there wasn't a lot of games that showed how massive of a difference that was. Destiny absolutely showed me what next generation could do.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said Destiny, because I didn't even think of putting that one on the list. And you're completely right. You know, Destiny, it created kind of the genre of, you know, games as a service. It was something completely new, and Bungie came out and they're like, here's this game. And yeah, the alpha blew us out of the water, and just,
which was arguably better than the whole game, but hey, whatever.
Yeah, it might not have been a perfect game, but it definitely changed the way that a lot of games are. You know, a lot of games still follow the Destiny approach, and I agree with you where we're like, wow, this is next gen.
I will say, when it came to you know, Bungie's turning point, when it came to the Activision deal, where it's just like, you know, this is meant to be like four games with like, you know, two or three expansions each. And like at the time when it was first announced, it was just like, okay, that's pretty exciting. Like this is a universe that you know, that Bungie agreed that like, you know, they'll really invest in and like flesh out, and like to be spanning out through multiple games, like it's a little iffy. Obviously that's, you know, to sell us more copies of stuff, but like, you know, what is this big grand vision of like of a ever-changing world that Bungie has in mind? And you know, although it was massively successful, apparently not successful enough for a fucking studio closer like Activision, you know. But I love that Bungie's pedigree and name is just so big that they're able to escape with their studio and like their employees intact and with their IP back in their hands. I mean, that was always the deal. But like, it's just so great. And then that's when we got to see like Destiny 2's like sort of like true being, where it's just like, you know, there may be a Destiny 3, but for like right now, it's all about like expanding the world and really like pivoting, trying to right the wrongs and like try to really give players what they really wanted. Now I've got back onto Destiny when it came to the new new free to play model when it comes to like the base game, and there are times where I really do want to pull the trigger and like get back into it with you guys, especially now that there's cross saving, so I can play on my PC whenever I feel like it. But
I'm currently downloading the Destiny 2 update.
So I'm proud of Destiny to just not be another developer who's just like, you know, I gotta do this big, you know, publisher contract and going back to being like, okay, now we're independent again, and you know, fucking, I'm gonna eat my cake and have it too, I guess.
Yeah, like what I would say, saying like that makes it such like a like this generation, like that's what I that really defined it for me, is even though it was bullshit that we bought a basically unfinished game and had to pay for the DLC, I still did. Yeah. You know, like I remember waiting in line, answering questions and watching that trailer over and over and going, holy shit, this is something we've never heard of. Like, hey, there'll be events where up to like however many players will join in this open world that you're sharing with people. Like that was not a thing, you know. It's like, and go on story missions with your friends, not just, oh, we have a multiplayer mode. Like you were playing the story with your friends, and then raids and doing these things that were so insane. But the biggest thing, that even though they didn't execute it well, it still defined so much. I still invested so much into it. And that's what's really impressive to me, is that I couldn't help but want to be a part of the Destiny world. I couldn't help but to want that. Like you're saying, like I'm tempted to pull the trigger on it. All these other things that they're not doing well, it almost doesn't matter, because I'm so tempted to get back into this world that was iconic, that really defined the generation.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Black Friday or Cyber Monday, it's probably gonna be a good time to grab that upgrade bundle.
Oh yeah.
Anyway,
Craig, you got any honorable mentions by any chance?
Oh man, yeah. Let's see. I love Dying Light. First Evil Within. Anything that's genre defining, I don't. I'd have to think about it.
Mm. But like, what about like your just favorite game that wasn't listed that you played that you're like, that was really fun and I loved it?
Yeah. Trove, 100%.
Trove.
I think a big one was Rocket League
Realm
that came out. You know, I wasn't one of my favorites, you know, but it definitely, yeah. It was really cool how we played Supersonic Aerobatic Rocket Power Battle Cars on the PS3, and it wasn't very well known. And then
it was,
yeah. And then Rocket League launches as a PlayStation Plus game, and it blows up. And, you know, people are still playing it. Like, it's huge now. And it's going free-to-play soon, too, just because, like, so many people are still playing it.
Very cool.
So I'd say that was one.
All right, yeah.
That's marketing, better name, better SEO.
I don't know, man. Supersonic Acrobatic Rock About Battle Cars is pretty solid.
Rolls off the tongue.
It rolls off the tongue. It's easy to remember.
So for my left field pick that defines the generation, it's going to have to be Trove. No. That's an inside joke for listeners. Sorry, guys.
Go play Trove. It's fantastic. It's free.
It's so good.
For me, it's going to be Pokemon Go. Mm. And
All right.
So kind of like Destiny, it wasn't perfect. You know, at first there wasn't trading. I believe like gyms and ratings happened later. I know raiding happened later and stuff like that. And like, so in the very beginning, it was just like somewhat a glorified pedometer where you hatch your eggs, just Pokemon. Pokemon and like a little bit of King of the Hill sort of kind of thing. And but like just simply like that's all it really needed for something so like familiar or simple. I mean, it's just a thing where like at first it's just like, oh, like, you know, it's going to be a nice trend. It's going to get people walking and all that stuff. But like that shit was like practically a movement where like it actually shifted like society a little bit. And it was just like news broadcast after article of like people getting hurt. And like, and like when there's like a big event, like how many people like show up at the park, or like some poor small business owner didn't realize he turned into a Pokestop and like there's fucking people all over his fucking shop, but not going inside to pay for anything. and like legitimate businesses being get the fuck away from me, or like straight up monetizing it where it's just like, yo, you fucking, I don't remember if it was true, but there was this story where it's just like, hey, if you come in, do what's happening.
I'm still here.
Okay. My point was basically done. Like, for something that was just supposed to just be simple, like, you know, Nintendo, Pokemon, like they always do these things where it's just like, oh, we're going to give you like a little Tamagotchi, like pedometer, or like, you know, we're fucking,
yeah.
Just random, like, I think there's even Pokemon Sleep at one time, or Pokemon Sleep's coming out, and whatever it was. But, like, just to have this thing where it's just, like, here's something, like, we're opposing as, like, oh, it's Pokemon in real life. Like, you can actually go out, you can catch Pokemon, like, it's real life. It's so cute, right? No, like, it turned into people's, like, lifestyle, where it's just, like, one or two times a week, I go on walks with my fucking boyfriend or whatever, and then we just catch Pokemon. It's just, like, still? It's, like, still. Are there updates? Sort of, but that doesn't matter, because it's fun.
Yeah, I would not have thought of that. I wouldn't have put a phone game into the generation thing, but you are so 100% right, because before that, phone games was not a legitimate thing. You played games on your phone, it didn't matter. That was not legitimate. But then Pokemon Go kind of solidified, like, you can play games on your phone, and we're gonna make this a thing. And like you said, it became a movement. I mean, I know people today that, like, that's what they do. Like, all of their spare time, it's like, I play Pokemon Go. And even I play it still. Like, every once in a while, I'll turn it on. And they've updated so much. But just the core fact of walking around with this iconic little thing that you're used to, you know, like, oh, I love Pokemon, I'm nostalgic for it. Like, that is a major draw. But then even people who have never played Pokemon before absolutely fell in love with Pokemon Go. People got introduced to Pokemon from Pokemon Go. And it's just amazing what that did. That like changed the game, you know, like, I can't imagine where any phone games would be without that. You know, it would be some weird little side niche. It wouldn't be taken seriously. But I think that showing that millions and millions of people were willing to get up, walk around, and play this game on their phone, developers and industry, the whole gaming industry, had to like stand up and notice and go, this is a viable candidate. We can do stuff here. We can put games on here and people will play them. You know, like that really changed so much that I really didn't think about until you mentioned it as a game for the generation.
Part of Pokemon Go I remember is Aaron actually having to buy a better phone just so he could play Pokemon Go.
I did.
And that speaks volume to how good and how, like, life-changing Pokemon Go was, where it's like, okay, we need good enough phones so we can go out and find these Pokemon.
And you did too, I believe.
Yeah, like, yeah. And so many people. And it was just...
even when we were looking, when we were driving around looking for places to live, before we ended up looking in Grass Valley, we were playing Pokemon Go on that trip.
Yeah, I remember you in my back seat, and you're like, oh, there's an Onix here and all this. And it's just like, so interesting. And that part when it blew up at the first time, like, there was nothing like that before. So I agree with you. I it feels so long ago, but you're right. Like, it was part of this generation, and there's other games coming out like it, but nothing's reached the height of Pokemon Go.
Not even Harry Potter.
Or the new Witcher one.
Oh yeah, there's the Witcher one.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I was going to say, not necessarily an honorable mention of a game, but I would say the Battle Royale genre. Mostly starting, like, if I had attributed to anything, I would attribute it to PUBG, because that's kind of the first one that made it big. But obviously, Fortnite is the major one that everybody knows. I mean, everyone on the planet knows what Fortnite is. I don't care if you're, you know, old, young, a nerd, a jock. Doesn't matter who the fuck you are, you know what Fortnite is, you know? And like, that's gotta be something be mentioned. That's gotta be something that's like, that's everybody knows that game. Like, that's a gamer thing. Like, I don't know if there's anything that's ever been like that before, that literally anyone on the street, you could say Fortnite and they will know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, like I gotta give that some credit there, you know?
I agree with you. And I think the one before that was Minecraft, you know, and it's funny that Fortnite had the same kind of Minecraft effect, where it just exploded and everyone across all ages like play it and know it. And there's like toys licensed after it. And like, it's become this whole worldwide thing. And
yeah, part of our language.
Yeah. And they have these huge events where they have Avengers in it. And, you know, Thanos was there. And like,
right.
Like it is. It's the biggest video game. It just is.
It just is. Yep.
Yeah, but how are your 90s though?
How are your 90s?
Yeah, it's a term in Fortnite. But no, I would also like amplify that, like, when it comes to, you know, genres, and, you know, not just like the individual games, like the trends of this generation are like walking simulators, Souls likes, and battle royales, and like,
yeah,
like there are top tiers of each of those genres, like Firewatch for, you know, for walk-ins, and you know, obviously nothing can be like a genuine Dark Souls and stuff, but like for Fortnite, yeah, like it is like definitely my, like, it gives me like my old man syndrome. I hate Fortnite. I don't understand it. I think the building is like such a high barrier of like accessibility, and like just be like I just want to shoot people, and like how you get matched up with people who can build 90s and build their walls like in half a second, and like you're still fumbling with the controllers. I don't know how people think that's fun, but no matter how much I can shake my cannon at it, you cannot deny it. Like,
yep.
Like this whole debacle with like the Apple and Epic going to freaking you know, lawsuit. There's two things that says about that game made Epic that big to go against Apple, and for two, how mad and screwed over everyone on iOS is right now. For if you haven't already downloaded it, or not even that, because like, even if you do still have it downloaded, you cannot update it, and people feel like they're messing out. And my God, it's like, it transcended the fucking Facebook gaming, where it's just like, yeah, everyone was doing their goddamn farming and all that stuff. And there are some people out there who don't necessarily classify themselves as like, you know, a traditional or classical gamer, whatever you call it. And they're just like, oh, but I play Fortnite all the time. It's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is like everyone plays it. Like, I mean, I'm in the same boat. I don't really like it all that much. You know, like I like the battle royale idea, but Fortnite specifically, I'm not interested at all, but I understand the appeal. But it, like, it's funny to me to hear like before I attribute it to like Call of Duty, you know, like there's some people who don't play video games, but I play Call of Duty. You know what I mean? And now it's like, I don't play games, but I play Fortnite, you know? And it's just like such a strange, that became so massive that it, I mean, that I think really does like not just define a generation, but that like defined gaming, you know, like that defined what it was to play games, you know, the whole new version of it.
small tangent, but I would like lump Call of Duty players with like sports game players, where like they, there's the one game they play and they do classify themselves as gamers. Like, oh, I love games. I play Madden all the time. And it's just like, what else do you play? And they're like, what?
Madden 2012. Play that one. I'm a retro gamer.
But anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. I could totally agree with that. I just think that's, it's insane to be like, when someone says, are you a gamer? Fortnite is involved. Like that's what you'd picture. Like if you ask someone like, do you play games? Fortnite's always the picture of what you're picturing. Like for me before, like each era, I would picture something different. Like when I was a kid, I'd picture Mortal Kombat. Like if I asked someone if they were a gamer, I'd be like, do you play Mortal Kombat? You know, like that's what like gaming looks like to me when I picture it. And now it's like gaming pictured. It looks like Fortnite.
God, you're so right. It's the Band-Aid right now. It's the Hot Pocket where like you say to a mom the word video game, they go like, oh, like that Fortnite my son won't stop playing.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, games are more than one game, right?
And we're the old men against it. Like, Fortnite.
Okay.
Play Enigmo.
I think that's the end of our show, guys. We have a long run time going on here. But I will say one more thing. Your game is not a battle royale unless it has werewolves or chickens in it.
That's right.
But I digress.
That was a good chicken noise.
Thanks.
But thank you guys so much for as long as this episode is. Like, I couldn't be more proud of it. I just want to say I'm going to be really cheesy right now, but like I'm so happy to surround myself with friends who are like so articulate and just as thoughtful about the industry and like what it can produce and this the escape, like how important its escapism for that. So I want to thank the both of you guys for not only being my friends but being my co-hosts on this podcast. Aww.
So are you gonna play Sea of Thieves with us?
Never. And so thank you guys so much for listening to the Speak Geeky podcast. You can follow us at Speaking Media, Twitter, on Instagram. That's just going to be Speakeaky. Please check out our YouTube. It's a little slow right now, but I got some videos recorded. I just got to get off my ass and edit them. And that's going to, we don't have a URL because, you know, Google's rules or whatever, but you can easily search Speakeaky. It's going to be the first result on Google and on YouTube. So I'm proud of that. Finally, our SEO is finally working out for us. But yeah, please give us a follow. Please give us a subscribe. Please give us a like, whatever the website's button says. And we'll be talking to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Later.